Pure Dog Talk is the voice of purebred dogs. We talk to the legends of the sport and give you the tips and tools to create an awesome life with your purebred dog. From showing to preservation breeding, from competitive obedience to field work, from agility to therapy dogs, and all the fun in between, your passion is our purpose. Today's show is brought to you by Show Dog Prep School. Online courses, webinars, and mentor programs on demand at showdogprepschool.com. Welcome to Pure Dog Talk. I'm your host, Laura Reeves, and I'm super excited because today we have with us again, Dr. Diane Brown. She is the Chief Executive Officer and the Chief Scientific Officer for the AKC Canine Health Foundation. And Dr. Diane, I am so excited. We are going to talk today about the initiative that CHF is working on in epilepsy.
That is right. And I'm excited to be here to talk about it with you. Thank you for the invitation.
Okay. So epilepsy, you told me, and I believe this is absolutely on target, the number one neurological problem in dogs.
That's exactly right. It crosses breeds, it crosses ages, it crosses gender. It is in all dogs, mixed breed dogs, purebred dogs, etc. It is the number one neurological condition that we see in dogs today.
And epilepsy presents in different ways. It has different types of disease. Is that accurate? I don't think I'm saying that right.
Yeah, it's complex, and you can get into all of the neurophysiology and but really, it can present in different ways. I mean, the classic is the grand mal seizure, the dog who is collapsed and is twitching and salivating and is one of the most difficult things to watch in a dog or a human. That's the classic form. There are milder forms that involve twitching. It really can run the spectrum. They can occur where you'll see one maybe once a month or less frequently, they can occur in clusters. And when one seizure happens, it seems to trigger more abnormal electricity in the brain that results in cluster seizures that just go on and on and on. And those are devastating. They are emergency situations and you need to intervene on them. So yes, epilepsy is a catch-all term,
right?
But it really has the whole spectrum of presentation, as I mentioned, different breeds, different ages, different causes.
Right. Okay, so let's maybe start with the causes, because my limited interaction with it, I'm fortunate I'm not inundated with epilepsy like some breeds are, but we see it. And so idiopathic epilepsy, and then what are some of our other... Like idiopathic meaning what? Like we don't know why your dog's having seizures, but we're going to call it epilepsy.
That's pretty much what idiopathic means. That's right. It's we don't know for sure. There are some clear genetically transmitted cases of epilepsy. There are toxicities that can result in epilepsy. There are structural defects, structural damage, trauma. Any number of things that can result in epilepsy and the occurrence of seizures, inflammatory diseases. So there are a number of things, and you really have to get at the root cause if you're going to try to treat them properly. Now, it can be an expensive and detailed workup by a veterinary neurologist that's required. You may or may not get to what the actual diagnosis is. Sometimes you can identify an infection or you can identify a structural problem. You can identify a brain tumor, something that's clearly causing this, but idiopathic is not uncommon. And as mentioned, it is the most common neurological condition in dogs. And the other thing that's really important to realize is that up to a third of these dogs are noted to be resistant to the current drugs that are available. So it's not like you get a diagnosis of epilepsy and, oh, okay, we'll give medication and it'll be controlled and you'll be fine.
Right.
A third of them are not controlled. And
wow.
Those are very difficult. They might require combination therapies. And, you know, the current medications that are available are less than ideal. They have side effects.
Right.
Side effects when you put them in combination. And so we're really setting out to try to infuse some major funding into this area that's so important to the health of so many dogs and their people, frankly.
Yeah.
Because it is a stressful thing to be a caretaker for a dog with epilepsy.
It is. It's devastating.
Yeah,
so.
It is devastating. And so this is why we started this initiative. We really want to make a concerted multi-year effort at trying to address epilepsy in dogs. And to date, we've invested almost $1.3 million, which in the grand scheme of funding that goes into human health research is not much, but if we don't do it, who's going to?
Right.
So we work very closely with other organizations, with other foundations that are smaller, that are also concerned about epilepsy, and we join forces to put real funding toward this research.
Excellent. Okay, so what are you looking at, like the genetic causes? I mean, what are some of your platforms you're working on with the epilepsy research right now?
So it really is across two broad areas. One is genetics,
mm-hmm.
and the other is therapies.
Okay.
So we need new, we need alternative, we need to know more about novel therapies that will help dogs. So there are new drugs that have been tested in dogs. For example, one of the grants that we funded has already resulted in identification of a new dosing option for dogs that come into the emergency room with status epilepticus. Now we know, because of this peer-reviewed research, what dose can be used. This can be used as an emergency therapy for dogs with epilepsy. And I would say it's probably been 20 years since there was a new
wow.
drug that could be used in these emergency status epilepticus cases. So that's one approach. The other is alternatives to standard pharmaceuticals. So this would be things such as CBD oil, which is the non-psychogenic mm-hmm. component of cannabis. So we've invested in a large clinical trial to actually put, again, some scientific data around a placebo-controlled, blinded clinical trial to identify whether the CBD oil can actually help dogs that have drug-resistant epilepsy.
Wow.
So that study, we're thrilled about. It's first in the country. We're the first ones to invest in this.
Nice.
It's in Colorado, of course.
I was hoping it was in Oregon. Come on.
And so they're in the first year of this study and are actively enrolling patients in the study. So,
wow.
Again, so we're looking at both new and alternative types of therapies and then looking at gene identification. And different breeds have different forms of epilepsy. There have been a number of genes that have been identified now. One of the most recent out of this initiative identified what's called a myoclonic form of epilepsy in juvenile Rhodesian Ridgebacks that's directly related to the same type of genetic defect in children. There are remarkable similarities between
wow.
pediatric and canine epilepsy.
Mm-hmm. So talk a little bit about that, this idea that at some point in my lifetime, right, that we might actually have a cheek swab and say, yes, it carries for epilepsy or it doesn't. Anything like that is so exciting.
That's right. And so that is certainly one of the goals. And this is one of the things that we can really value in this community of purebred dog lovers. They invest in the health of their dogs. They are doing the best that they can to have healthy dogs. And they're very committed to their breeding practices, as well as many of them to canine health research. And we work closely with them. So when a breed-specific problem has been identified based on review of pedigrees, etc., we help to identify who's the best researcher that could look at this. And how do we find whether we can get to an answer of a specific genetic test? And genetics is complicated. It's always ideal that you think that you can get a single gene that's going to define a specific problem and, yes, read it out of that line. Often it's not that simple.
Right.
So there are many different ways to look at this genetically, and that's part of what we're doing.
Hang tight, guys. Got a little bit of information for you. We'll be right back to the podcast in a minute. All right, crew. Last month, I was filling you in on the Trupanion Breeder Support Program. And in case you missed it, this is a free program for breeders that lets us offer our buyers, our puppy buyers, a go-home day offer so that they can try out Trupanion and everybody has the peace of mind that that puppy is covered in case of any kind of an incident. But I was talking to Haran recently, and I didn't realize at the time that they actually have a breeding rider that is additional to the regular healthcare coverage that Trupanion offers our dogs. And so I wanted to bring Haran Greer from Trupanion back to tell us about it because I was blown away. So welcome, Haran.
Thanks, Laura. Thanks for having me back. And I'm happy this came up in conversation.
Yeah, right? So tell us about it. This is pretty incredible to me.
Yeah, so I'll just start at the basics. You know, so if you join Trupanion, we just have one simple plan. It's 90% coverage for the unexpected illnesses, accidents, and injuries. And then from there, breeders can add a breeding rider coverage to make sure that they're protected from the unexpected things that can happen with breeding.
Okay, so what does that cover? What kind of things are you covering in your claims with the breeding rider?
So it's truly things that are unexpected. So anything that you can't plan for in advance is what Trupanion gives you peace of mind from, right? But with the breeding rider, you know, the most common claim that we see are for C-sections.
Mm-hmm.
But as I was looking through, I was curious just to see what kind of claims we have been seeing in the past year. I was surprised that pyometra payouts have exceeded what we've paid out for C-section.
Wow.
So the claims paid ranged from the lowest one that we paid out was $1,740, and the highest one to date this year has been $5,500.
That's pretty incredible. So how much does a person pay to add that breeding rider to their regular insurance coverage?
So that rider has variables. You'll want to give us a call or go to our website. The factors are things like where you live, what breed you have, is it a male or female, how old are they, and then the deductible. And those
right.
deductible options is where, you know, the flexibility comes in
mm-hmm.
for your monthly payment. And those range from zero to 1,000.
Okay, beautiful. So check it out, listeners, puredogtalk.com. You can find the Trupanion website. Just click that logo and it will take you in to get lots and lots of information about some stuff that I think not all of us always think about. So thank you, Haran. I really appreciate your time.
Thanks so much, Laura. I hope to be back on soon.
I love that. I have so many high hopes that this brings some kind of answer. You know, we know that this isn't going to be easy or quick, but I love that we are potentially headed in that direction. That is amazing.
Yeah. And, you know, to branch out a little bit in another new area that we're investing is the role of the intestinal tract. There is a entity called the gut-brain axis. And it's known in, again, using humans as our animal model for disease and bringing that information into canine health research. What's happening with the microbiome or the population of bacteria in the gastrointestinal tract of the dog may end up having some influence on what's happening with their neurological health.
Wow.
So we've invested in research to look at that gut-brain axis and the microbiome of the gut in dogs, and then also the role of nutrition. There is some evidence that certain types of nutritional modifications can end up impacting the treatment of, again, especially the drug-resistant epilepsy cases. So I think we look at this as how do we build a whole toolbox? You know, there's not going to be a single answer here,
mm-hmm.
but the more tools we have in our toolbox, the more we can use combination therapies that are not just pharmaceuticals, but will improve quality of life and reduce seizures by using alternative therapies, nutritional therapies, and drugs, and genetics. And biomedical research is expensive. All of it takes an investment to try to get at peer-reviewed scientific research, because you've got to put money after good, strong scientific research. Otherwise, you end up with anecdotes that really lead you nowhere ultimately.
Well, right. And you're never going to develop a gene marker or anything else with an anecdote, right? Like, we have to actually have science here.
You do have to have science. Yep. And science works kind of like a puzzle, a piece at a time. It builds on itself. And all of this, in my mind, the best single word I can use is investment. Mm. We are investing in the future of dogs and the health of dogs. And this epilepsy initiative is a really fine example of that.
Absolutely. And I think it's a great place to look at when we talk to the general public. And the general public says, oh, purebred dogs are bad. And I'm like, hey, how about the fact that my purebred dog community is supporting the research to solve why your pet dog from the pound has epilepsy?
Yeah. Well, and even to help to inform human cases of epilepsy.
Right.
You know, and I think that the key here is the sharing of information back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we are for the health of all dogs. The purebred dog community is amazing. A lot of what has been learned and published about canine health in general, and I'm digressing a little bit here, comes from the funding of research specifically in a particular breed.
Mm-hmm.
So here's what happens then. There becomes this false impression that purebred dogs are somehow then less healthy. Well, it just happens they're the ones who invested in the research that resulted in a publication, so that when you go to search for information on these disorders, these breeds pop up.
Right.
But whether we're talking about cancer, epilepsy, tick-borne disease, really, it also occurs in the mixed breed dog population.
Absolutely.
And anyone who is a mixed breed dog owner knows that they've dealt with these same sorts of disorders. And yet it's the purebred dog population, because of the nature of being able to study a population where there are known pedigrees going back generations and generations, their investment in research through the AKC Canine Health Foundation and others, that's what results in the scientific findings that then can be applied to new tests, new treatments, and the overall improvement of health for dogs.
For every dog. And I was just sitting here in my chair doing a happy dance because you totally nailed that. That's awesome. I think that's exactly right and exactly what we need to be looking at. And I think that AKC and the Canine Health Foundation and the work that they are doing on this is incredible. And I think that it's important that people understand that, yes, our parent clubs contribute, and yes, the American Kennel Club contributes, but we too, as individuals, can contribute to the Canine Health Foundation to support specific initiatives.
That's right. And, you know, we need everybody to be involved with this if we're going to be able to make a difference. Really, the funding is where the limitations lie.
Mm-hmm.
There's so much that we could do, so much more we could do. And we've been able to grow our programs and research grant funding. And we can continue to do that if everyone participates. It all makes such a difference. And we take those funds and we put them to work. I mean, this has become my passion. My entire career has been about animals, and being able to see where we can really advance canine health in this stepwise fashion and doing really scientifically strong research with measured outcomes is key. You know, in this area of, you talk about investment in research.
Right.
The AKC Canine Health Foundation was founded in 1995 by the AKC and the people who had a vision for advancing the health of dogs. And our mission statement is for advancing the health of all dogs, as you say,
mm-hmm.
and to also support their people. So mm-hmm. that's the one health component of this. So it gives us a real freedom to invest in research. We have funded over $42 million in research since 1995, more than 900 studies. It's resulted in more than 700 peer-reviewed publications, which have then gone on to be cited more than 23,000 times. That's what you call getting the word out. That's what you call getting these investments put toward the next building blocks for the health of dogs.
Wow. Now, those numbers that you just cited, I hadn't even heard those. That is amazing. I mean, truly amazing. And the other thing that I think is really incredible, and I'm like everybody else, I give money to places, but you were telling me that literally 94 cents out of every dollar that's donated by you, me, or Purina goes to the actual funding and not to overhead and administration and all that kind of thing.
Right. So if you go to Charity Navigator, which is the gold standard for measuring 501c3 charitable organizations, you will see that we have a fundraising efficiency of 6%. So 6 cents on the dollar goes to fundraising. That's extremely low. It's a very efficient use of funding. And when you support the AKC Canine Health Foundation, you know that your funds go to our programs, our research programs, our educational programs. It is really an incredible measure of investment, again, toward our mission. And that's all metrics that you can see. You can go look this all up and find that, and it's really key. And again, I'll give a shout out to the American Kennel Club for the support that we get from them, and that also allows us to be efficient with our use of funds and be able to put them toward research and programs.
Right, absolutely. Okay, well, Diane, thank you so much. We are going to provide links once again on the website to the Canine Health Foundation page, to the Epilepsy Initiative specifically. Hopefully, we will again get to talk to you in the future about some of the other enormously cool things that you guys are working on. Hemangiosarcoma comes to mind.
Yes.
So I really appreciate your time, and I really appreciate your effort, because I know that that high efficiency rating means that you do all the work. So.
Well, it's been a real pleasure to talk with you, Laura, and I appreciate your time and the time of your audience. And I always have to take the opportunity to thank all of the people who are involved with our foundation and our donors. And most of all, we really think about the dogs and why we're doing this.
Yep, absolutely. I think it's absolutely amazing work. So thank you. Thank you for your time. And I look forward to talking to you again some more in the very near future.
Thanks, Laura.
And now a quick tip from our friends at American Dog Fancier. ADF is begging you, please do not use an unflattering photo of your dog, no matter how high the award. ADF can easily insert a great picture of your dog with the judge at no extra charge. Design is always included in the cost of your ad at American Dog Fanciers. Affordable show dog advertising. Mention Pure Dog Talk and get 10% off your first ad with American Dog Fancier. As always, if you have any questions or input, we'd love to hear from you. The show notes and links to resources on today's topic are available at puredogtalk.com. Drop us a note in the comments or email to Laura at puredogtalk.com. Remember, guys, this podcast is for you. So if you want to know something, give me a holler. We'll do a podcast for you. If you wouldn't mind, you could help me out here. Take a couple minutes to visit iTunes and give us a review. The Dog Show Superintendents Association is a proud supporter of Pure Dog Talk. Our dog show superintendents are the hardworking people who make the dog show function. They are advocates for education and mentorship in the purebred dog fancy. So stop by the super's desk at your next show. Tell them how much you love Pure Dog Talk and give them a shout out for their support. That's all for today. Thank you for joining us on Pure Dog Talk.